Your ATM is safe. Your banks are safe. There's enough cash in the financial system. And there is an infinite amount of cash at the Federal Reserve. An infinite amount of cash at the Federal Reserve.
An infinite amount of cash at the Federal Reserve.
Don't you want somebody that don't want you?
Then I would sell my Bitcoin right into this rally. And believe me, I hadn't been a believer one time in Bitcoin. Not here, not now.
Find somebody to love. Don't you
arbitrage on this trend has been margin called.
Think you was a hook. Trust in your idols, now they got you shook. Believe in the crooks. Hell of the same. Are they cooking the books? Save up a day and I lost in a day. Another new rent rap's just getting away. Bigger the bag. Bigger ripple effect. When it all blows off, it is you who will pay.
Behind the ass is not the success. Pull back the curtains and what do you get? And it's the risk with a bit if you're net. Made from your savings and 401k. Give it to the other side of the trade. Socialize less is why we've in the game. First to fall and it's rick with swore. Cause you're just a pawn in the fertility stream.
Money talks, we pay for the show. Pay for the crowd. Pay for the thrill. Pay for the media to lie to our face. Taught the truth so we repeat our mistakes. Sell us the dream that never delivers. Fees, including the tickets, siphoning funds from the mouthless bigots, blindly the blind to the all complicit. Money is cheap and addicted to growth. Commingle the risks so nobody knows. How far ever go to a damaged collateral? Another excuse for oppressive control. From government capture with private play. Reapers of value at the end of the day. We're calling for help, but nobody came. From bailouts to pawns and complainers.
Money deeply rots at the core. Don't believe intentions are pure. This crypto contagion stems from a system that incentivized fraud. As schemes get more complex and fallible, humans left unchecked. Playing the dark is how you get wrecked. And our economies are lost to you.
What would happen if we take our money out of its systems? Why protest our labor when we can pull out our capital? Where would we be if our money enriched us? Simply by holding purchasing power. How do we build a base? Replace the continental effects with the world of free markets.
Build an independent system to remove the risk of corruption.
Step two.
Move our savings into that system so no one can ever touch it.
Step three.
Earn, save, spend, trade, all activities move this way. With our own money, everything changed. We no longer positive to you.
I'm tired of our desire, earning our work, and tired of earning a piece of pie, or if you want to be a pie. Money is not our purest one when the match keeps scoring the politicians. Come and capture it out of the place, and we reap the value at the end of the day.
So we can move value without being censored. Move on from gambling and saving. Move on from all the politics. Move on to the end of the internet.
So we don't have to trust every word they say. So freedom and wealth can be taken away.
So we treat and punish all the same.
So we can tempt the chill of this game.
Knowing the truth will break the frame. Now our perspectives forever change. Truth is the key for us to reclaim.
Open the door, it's in the game.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Bitcoin Veteran Spaces, episode 81. I am your host, Coleman, and I want to thank everybody for joining me this morning. I want to give a couple of quick shout-outs to listeners in the audience. Lynn B., good morning, ma'am. Texas Toast, Ace, Jordan, always tuning in. LBN, good morning, ma'am. Matthew, King Bateman, KG, Free Dom, Bob Van Kirk, Jordan on the Operation Libertas handle, Wade on the Bitcoin Alaska handle, and of course, Eomar NAC. I sent both of you an invite to come join the panel. But how was your evening, Bob and Jordan?
Awesome. Before I tell you what I did last night, it was great to hear that intro music again. But last night we had a great meetup, kind of a Christmas party Bitcoin meetup. So it was, a blast, about 35 people, all getting together and celebrating 100K Christmas, all that stuff. So it was good stuff.
You said it was a Bitcoin company Christmas party or just a Christmas party?
Bitcoin meetup in Dallas, Texas.
Ah, gotcha. And yes, for those who missed it or missed that joke Bob had said, yesterday I was the only one listening to that intro music. I thought I had unmuted my mic, and so I was jamming out solo. So I apologize for that. But how was everybody at the Bitcoin meetup? Is everybody positive? Everyone getting bored of 100K? Like, what was the sentiment?
It seems people are, expectant of higher numbers, but, yeah, everybody's in a good mood talking about all kinds of different topics, like, you know, the importance of self-custody, the different ways to do that, inheritance planning, lots of good just conversations going on about all kinds of things.
Out of curiosity, Bob, who do you recommend for inheritance planning?
You know, this is what I said last night too, because this came up, but one of the things that's difficult is just like everybody's financial situation is different. And so, there's not like really one, great place. I mean, there's a ton of different companies that offer it, and they all have, you know, trade-offs and, you know, benefits and trade-offs. And so I'm not trying to dodge the question. I think it's just more of a difficult thing to endorse someone for, you know, an entire group of people when you don't know their entire situation. So I think we could probably dig into some of them. But you know, for those just getting started, I think, accumulating on an exchange for a little while is fine. And then, you know, moving that to self-custody is kind of a journey. And so once you have accumulated enough, you should self-custody. And then from there, once it becomes, you hold on to it long enough, it becomes valuable enough, then you want to be looking at, inheritance planning. So I think everybody's in a different situation, but this is the reason they call it a rabbit hole, is because, you know, as time goes on, the longer you are accumulating and holding, the more responsibility you have to learn things and to find solutions to the problems that having this freedom money presents as number goes up as well.
Bob, I think that's a really good answer. I know you said, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm dodging the question. I think, I feel like there should be more of that. Like, just give an honest answer of like, look, it's kind of different to everybody. And I think that's what I think like the fiat mindset is like, I'm supposed to have an answer to any question that's ever asked me or have an opinion on something, whether I really know it deeply or not. And I think giving an honest answer like that is really what we're going to need moving forward into the Bitcoin standard of like, there's more nuance than just a simple explanation. So I don't think you dodged it. I think you answered it perfectly.
Yeah. And so what I'll say is like, you know, feel free to reach out to me. I'm happy to like, you know, I was in banking for 21 years. I've helped people, you know, in the fiat world, but now I help people in the Bitcoin world. And the idea is, you know, some people just need to get off zero, right? We've talked about that before. That's your starting point. Once you're beyond that, then it's, you know, learn self-custody, and there's all kinds of ways to do that. And then, you know, if it becomes something, maybe, I know this sounds, you know, kind of crazy, but if it becomes enough of your wealth, say in 8 years or a decade, and you need to trust a third party, there's good ways to do that. One of the things, you know, I've been exploring and working on is, multi-institutional custody. So I'll just kind of riff on this briefly here, if that's okay, Coleman. But basically what you do is find three trusted parties in the space that can work together to hold three different keys. And the benefit of that is that if any of those companies or maybe eventually financial institutions either become insolvent or go bankrupt, the custody of your Bitcoin is not held, where any of those parties have a majority key. So that means that your Bitcoin is not sitting on any of their balance sheets, which means that if they fail, your Bitcoin doesn't go to, a bankruptcy estate where then you're only getting fractions back. So, you know, there will come a day if you hold Bitcoin long enough where it'll become worth enough that you'll be looking into these things. And so I know it seems crazy, but like businesses don't want to deal, a lot of businesses don't want to deal with holding even one of their own keys. They want to just farm this out. And so, you know, depending on who you are and what your situation is, you have to start looking at alternatives for custody. And so should you go to that right away if you just bought your first $1,000 worth of Bitcoin? No, it's not right for you. You should probably self-custody. But again, once it becomes meaningful, or if you're someone who's higher net worth and able to buy, you know, significant amounts, or you're a business that's able to buy significant amounts, then this might be something that you would look for in the future. So there again, I mean, it's just, it's all approach based on people's, needs. And so, hope I didn't, you know, drone on too long about that stuff, but, maybe it's an interesting topic for people to think about.
No, you did perfect, Bob. And I don't mean to talk over you, Jordan, but this is a discussion I think we definitely have to, continue, and we need to go through. And there's, and you said it right. There's pros and cons to doing it. And at this moment, there's not a one solution fits everybody's personal needs. So I want to spend a little bit more time on this. Jordan, I see, and AC, have your hands up. So definitely dive in.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, when you were mentioning, you know, having seeds with multiple companies just in case one of them goes under, well, it got me thinking, well, what if these companies start to merge? That would be another thing to like keep an eye on. If all of a sudden, you know, three companies become one and they've got access to all your stuff. I don't know if that's a rabbit hole you've gone down.
Yeah, I like that. And I do think that diversification of those parties is extremely important due to that fact. So, you know, where we're, you know, I'm from the banking space, and what I've been working on in my consulting with financial institutions is not only educating them on what Bitcoin is, but then also showing them how they can easily participate in this type of custody model. And the benefit to that is for the people who would want this, not only are they, you know, having a regulated financial institution participate in this, this custody setup, but it's a different type of entity than these tech companies, right? So I think you bring up a really good point. When you are choosing these types of things, you have to look at the trade-offs, and you also have to be, it's not one of those set it and forget it things, right? It's part of the rabbit hole. So I think that's a great, pitfall. If you have entities that are too closely related providing these services, they could certainly either fail or be acquired by one of the parties. I think in that case though, you know, the terms and conditions would be set up. Terms and conditions would be set up to, make it so they would have to, you know, diversify the keys.
AC, did you want to go ahead? I'm not hearing anybody right now, so give me a thumbs up or a thumbs down. Okay, good. So it's not just me. I just want to welcome Dr. Nick to the stage. Good morning, sir. Did you have anything you wanted to hit on this topic?
Hey, good morning. Yeah, I just kind of want to throw out there, I heard, who was it, Bob, I think, was talking about inheritance. And more so as an anecdote, not necessarily a recommendation, but this Christmas, I'm onboarding most of my family using the BitKey. So my parents have one right now. I got that from my parents, I think, earlier this summer. It's going to be my sister's Christmas present. But they also just rolled out an inheritance plan for, I think, just one member of the family right now. And I believe they're trying to add more. It's a process that takes, you know, maybe up to 6 months or so. You got to verify, you know, death certificates and whatnot. So there's a little bit of KYC involved in that, but it's a fairly simple way to onboard your family. The BitKey is just a really smooth, intuitive UI, and it makes it a lot easier for people who aren't so familiar with Bitcoin to store their corn in, you know, a multi-sig setup. And there is kind of one caveat to that. There's, because you can buy, it acts as an exchange as well. So you can buy Bitcoin directly to your BitKey. But then you have the whole UTXO thing to worry about. You don't want them to be buying small chunks. So you just got to kind of, educate your family a little bit on that. And make sure that they're probably buying on an exchange. And then when there's like a large enough UTXO that they can move over, they can go ahead and do that, move that to cold storage. But yeah, I just want to share that more as an anecdote.
Thank you for that. I've never used BitKey. The only one that I really know for inheritance would be Nunchuck. They have a yearly fee that you pay, and I think it's about $100. It's not very expensive, but they guarantee inheritance planning in case something were to happen. And it's multi-sig, so they don't have direct control of it. But I just want to give a quick shout out to Lisa in the audience. Good morning, ma'am. If you want to come up here on stage, definitely like to hear how Bitcoin Mino went for you. Go ahead, AC.
Hey, Coleman, can you hear me now?
I can hear you. Yes, sir.
Okay, awesome. I was having some technical difficulties, but I'm back up and running. So I wanted to pivot back briefly to Bob. Bob, listening to you talk about Dallas and your banking background, I think you and I met at Dunstan's earlier this year during BitBlock Boom. And kind of, if I'm right, yep, okay, cool. I see the thumbs up. If I'm right, I think that really ties into the Citadel project that you were sharing with me as far as multi-institutional custody. And I don't know if you're ready to be a little bit more public about that, but I think that there's an interest in the Bitcoin veteran community, actually a significant interest in setting up Citadels. So I was wondering if you'd be willing to share some of your experience and what you've had as far as successes thus far.
Yeah, no, it's cool. Coleman, feel free to cut me off, but this is a project that we've been working on now for actually in 2 days. We closed on December 15th of last year. So it's been nearly a year since this all kind of came to fruition. But essentially, a group of us in the Dallas-Fort Worth area got together and acquired a 30-acre property just north of the border in Oklahoma. And so the proximity is nice. Obviously, it's acreage, but it's on a river. It's got some woods. Three-bedroom, two-bath house. And really the idea was to create, we call it the Orange Pill Retreat, but really the idea is to create, one, prove that we could do this together, and then two, basically open source the model to others in other areas where there's good communities of Bitcoiners. And so what we did was we essentially overfunded the purchase of the property. So the property we negotiated to $450,000, and I'm okay sharing like the numbers because I think it's just real for people. So, you know, depending on where you're at, the costs of the property obviously could be more or less, just depending on where you're at. But what we did was we raised, for the investors that were interested, we raised $600,000, and the goal was to essentially have everybody pay dues for the property, and that would provide us with a small amount of operating cash, right, for expenses and things like that. But the $150,000 that we raised in excess of the purchase price went into a Bitcoin treasury. And so just to kind of expand upon that now, as I'm sure everybody can understand, with the price appreciation of Bitcoin, we're sitting in terms of dollars on a lot more, a lot more value there than, we were when we started. And so, you know, it's going to provide us with some, opportunity to either, hodl and let that appreciate, even longer, or we can, you know, start spending that down. And so the idea is to, potentially create, you know, tiny homes so we can have, you know, a place to go, or, and, or I think, one of the things that we've been kicking around is creating, a meeting space so we can have events. And so we're going to, you know, continue to look at options. And I think the biggest thing is not just the this investment, so to speak, but it's that we were able to come together as Bitcoiners, people who generally speaking don't have a lot of trust in other people. We were able to come together and create an operating agreement and a structure that protects a lot of our privacy, but also, you know, created this great project and this great place where we can have, you know, meetings and things like that. In fact, we did have a Christmas party that we invited people from DFW up to, last Saturday. And so we had a blast up there, just hanging out with families and, you know, had food and, it was just a good time. But, we'll see how we can use this for Bitcoin purposes in the future. So, it's been a good year. Looks like you got a question there, Bitcoin Alaska.
Yeah, that's something I've been looking at doing actually since long before I entered any of the Bitcoin spaces. Actually tried to get something formed up for a remote area in Southeast Alaska to purchase some property with some other people. And I formed up, I went with a cooperative structure legally. And I'm wondering how you did it on a legally, is it cooperative or is it private or is it under an umbrella?
It's a good question. And I'm glad like you asked because I think it's the hardest part for people. And I would say there's probably a multiple ways that you can do this. What we chose was to create a trust to acquire the property. And then we created an operating company to essentially operate the property. So what that does is it kind of protects you from, you know, lawsuits and those types of things. But then there's an operating agreement amongst all of the, they're not called shareholders. It's just that we all own units in the entity. We were trying to stay away from, you know, having to register with the SEC and all of those things. So, yeah, if you or anyone else wants to, message me, I'm happy to, you know, share, like, we want to open source this. We just haven't, created the, like, a portal for anybody to access it. So, but I'm willing to share, you know, our documents because I think for some people that's going to be a difficult road. We probably spent around $5,000-$6,000 in attorney fees to do this and to do it right. But, I think that is going to pay dividends. We set up rules in there where basically any of the investors can get out, but, it's a, you know, the idea is if you want to protect your investment and the price appreciation, you need, you know, we just put this in the bylaws that you need to be in it for 3 years. And there are ways to get out earlier where we would, you know, buy people out, but you know, that comes with a penalty. Essentially, the penalty is, whatever you put in your investment, whatever you put in is what you would get out. So you don't get any of the price appreciation. And so everybody is, you know, looked at it as a long-term investment, not just something to, you know, play around with. And so we were able to weed out a lot of people who were not serious because of it, because of the way we structured it. But we also, you know, have people who are, have a vested interest, especially when you see what Bitcoin's done over the last year. And we're all sitting on, you know, percentages of that treasury, which is growing at a far faster clip than the real estate.
Jordan, I see your hand up. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I think that sounds so awesome. And it's amazing how we are changing the mindset of investors, at least like within our space or people that are interested in getting in, the way you talked about like weeding out the people who aren't maybe in it for the right reasons. Or, you know, that could be a subjective opinion, but amongst Bitcoiners, like the right reasons, right? And, Alex Svetsky's, The Bushido of Bitcoin the other day, and I've been reading that and just building the idea of like building out these, like a code of virtue, or just kind of like the themes of what it means to be a Bitcoiner and what that future looks like, and actually going out into the world and creating it, and to see people like Bob and a lot of other people in this space going out and doing that. Like, I would recommend reading the book. I'm only like a quarter of the way through it, but it's very good so far. But just that concept of like building out the philosophy of what it means to be a Bitcoiner and then applying that into the real world. And everybody here, like, we are all the founding fathers of this thing that we're building. So I would just kind of challenge people to have that in the back of your mind as you're building things out. Like, what do you want the future to look like? And most people in this space have those types of virtues that are doing it for the right reasons, and are, they're, hence they're building structures like Bob's talking about that are oriented towards those goals.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. And I think for me, the biggest like learning thing for this whole project is the trust lines that are established, right? So it's kind of like what you said, right? Going out in the world and creating what you want it to look like. But you have this like built-in camaraderie, like we've all lived through the ups and downs and choke point 2.0 and all these other different things that you know, we hash on this show every day. But what's cool is I think Bitcoin and Bitcoiners have really matured from, you know, the cypherpunk, trust no one, take no prisoners, to normal everyday people who, you know, we still have some of those feelings and some of that mantra, but now we're willing to, in certain circumstances, trust each other a little bit more. And I think that, community and that trust is something I see kind of going the other way in most of our society. And so it's just this, thing that I had to run into. And instead of running away from, like I see, you know, again, most of when I first moved to Texas a couple of years ago, I was like, does anybody live here? It was super hot. I'm from the Midwest. And I was like, does anybody live in this neighborhood? I never see anybody outside. And, you know, I think that even when it's not so blistering heat, people still tend to just stay indoors and, you know, they're all on their screens. And what I like about the Bitcoin community is we get out and do stuff, right? And we're out building the world that we want to see. And so I would encourage you all to, you know, look at your community. And if you're not involved in one, seek out people if you can in your local area that are Bitcoiners, and yeah, dream it and do it. I think there's tons of opportunities. One thing that this has opened me up to is as I network with people and talk to people, like I have a gentleman I was telling this story to who's in, he's a real estate developer in Dallas, and he called me up the other day. He's like, hey, I listened to what you guys were doing. How would this apply to our company? Like, would you come and talk to us next week about how we could basically overfund a real estate deal? And would that open us up to new investors like Bitcoiners who might want to diversify and still get some upside to Bitcoin? Or like, would it make it easier for us to raise funds because the banks, you know, a lot of the banks don't like commercial real estate right now. And so, so there's real estate developers that are looking at it saying, hey, if we had a $10 million deal, should we raise 12 and commit to our people that we're going to, hodl $2 million worth of Bitcoin to kind of sweeten the deal and level out some of the, when you do a real estate deal and you're asking investors, usually you're saying, hey, it's a 6 to 10 year, hold. And you're not going to get your money back for 6 to 10 years at least. And so to be able to have that optionality with Bitcoin where the time horizon on the appreciation is a little bit shorter in, you know, the Bitcoin cycle so far, it might give people the ability to get out some of their capital early if they needed to And so anyway, there's just all kinds of things happening. And when you start building things like this, it opens up other opportunities that you didn't see before as you tell your story. So exciting, exciting stuff. And don't want this show to be all about me, but we just, you know, we've had some experiences, and I hope people can use it as encouragement to go out there and build community and, you know, fight for what you love, fight for what you want to do and what you want to see in the world.
No, I think that was, this was a great way to kick this off, Bob. And it just shows you the possibility of what this can do. Like, there's really no, everything is possible through Bitcoin. As long as you just have the grit and determination, you can use it. You can just wield it as a power and you can just make anything happen. So, I really do appreciate this. Lisa, I see your hand up. Good morning, ma'am.
Hey guys. Good morning. Good morning, Bob. Morning, Coleman.
Good morning.
Good morning. I was actually not in MENA. Of course, I was very kindly invited by Bitcoin Magazine to come to MENA, but I had already accepted an invitation to go to Africa. And so I've been in Africa for the last couple of weeks at the Africa Bitcoin Conference and toured a couple of Bitcoin mining sites with Gridless, went on safari with Gridless and about 12 other Bitcoiners. Just so much hope on the African continent. It's astounding. I mean, I, you know, have been back just 24 hours or so, and I just think, gosh, we're so lost on Bitcoin Twitter. I mean, I love you people. Don't get me wrong. I love you guys. But, like, they are actually building the coolest stuff in Africa, solving real-world problems. Just incredible stuff going on. Highly recommend that you guys go watch the videos. I think they're up on YouTube already. Farida did an amazing job. And of course, Jack was there in the second row every day of the conference, all day of the conference. I mean, listening to every presentation, which is just absolutely epic.
Lisa, would you mind kind of going into a little bit more detail of what Gridless is doing in Africa? I find that part just really fascinating with the mining side and how we're able to bring energy that's just stranded and allowing us to just empower these small little villages that no one wants to invest any money into. So if you can just spend a little time talking about what they're doing just for people who might be unaware.
Yeah. Well, you know, they are, Gridless is essentially, I would describe them as a power company. I mean, that's really what they're building. They're building power infrastructure. And yes, they're mining Bitcoin, but they have created some partnerships with some electricity infrastructure folks to go in and power communities or provide greater access to power. So maybe there was some power infrastructure, but it wasn't economical for the operator to run it. So maybe they had, you know, very intermittent power, a couple of hours a day. You know, I mean, you guys know the story. Gridless is now in there as the buyer of first and last resort. We were actually in a tiny little town. You know, the houses all around the site were, not exactly sure what the right word is, but for lack of a better one, they were like little shanties. And these folks had never experienced 24/7 power before Gridless got there. And it's, you know, really kind of steep terrain, mountainous terrain, very fertile, beautiful. And Gridless, I think it's their first site, set up, next to a hydro, next to a dam. And I took a bunch of pictures. I'll post them later, but it was just really incredible to, you know, I didn't go house to house, but a few of the folks, in our group, went house to house and delivered some food and such. And just to think that, you know, 2 years ago, there were people who lived without power and now have 24/7 power thanks to Bitcoin mining. And I, so anyway, back to Gridless. I mean, that's really what they're doing, is they're a power infrastructure company. And they're using Bitcoin and to be the customer, but their goal, I think, is to really, you know, help electrify the continent of Africa.
And you're right with that, Lisa. And one of the things I find that it's just so empowering with what Gridless is doing is the average ROI for anybody that was to invest in electrical grids over in Africa was about 20 to 25 years before they could break even on the project. But the way that Gridless is integrating the Bitcoin miners with their setups, their ROI drops down to about 3 to 5 years, and the effects for the citizens of where they're installing these power grids is really extreme. That when they do have power in Africa, their average kilowatt rate is well over a dollar. But when Gridless comes out and we're able to hook up these Bitcoin miners to it, they drop down by about 30 to 40% on their electrical rate. So it's saving these people just a ton of money. And then you don't even look into the economic side or just what's going to happen for this next generation. Like you said, they don't have access to 24/7 power. So can you imagine just being a young school child doing all of your homework by candlelight or only being able to do it according to when the sun is risen, so you have light. But because of what Gridless is doing, you're able to start studying longer. You're able to achieve better grades. Now, if you're in that town, you have 24/7 electricity, you can afford to purchase a refrigerator to keep cold drinks and start a little, a little market to sell drinks to the locals. So again, I can't say enough good things about Gridless. I think in the next 10 years, the continent is going to be greatly improved strictly because of them and what they're doing. So, again, I really like that.
Yeah, definitely. Completely agree with you. Such an incredible team. There are other Bitcoin miners that are over there as well. They have a kind of a consortium of African Bitcoin mining companies that all hang together and what one another are doing, and they're mining in all kinds of really cool and probably really not so cool, not so safe places. So anyway, it was great. I definitely would go back. They had hundreds of people. I'm not quite sure how many people were there, but maybe it was 1,000 folks in a beautiful hotel in Nairobi, where everybody could stay together and got to hang out together, and just everybody had breakfast every day together at the hotel restaurant. I mean, it was just great. It was really a nice sort of break.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad you have fun going there. Just really quick, I want to give a quick thank you to our partners, Paladin Tower Tactics, professional firearms and tactical training at paladintowertactics.com. Punchplate, stamp your seed phrase on a metal plate. Check them out at punchplate.com. Black Sheep Ammo, restock your ammo at blacksheepammo.com. And Solo Satoshi, open source Bitcoin mining. Use the code BTCVETS for 5% off your order. And if you pay in Bitcoin, you can get an additional 10% off for a potential of 15% off your order. Solosatoshi.com. And Bitcoin Alaska, July 5th and 6th. This is going to be an amazing conference in Juneau. Make sure you get your tickets. They are limited, and make sure you secure your lodging accommodation. Juneau is a hot spot to go. The hotels are very limited, so that'll be the first thing that sells out. So go to bitcoinalaska.org to get your tickets. And again, a reminder, this is a family-friendly conference. So you can bring your wife, your husband, the children, your in-laws. Again, this is going to be an amazing, so make a fun trip out of it. There will be a lot of pre and post conference activities. So get there early, stay late, and just have fun hanging out with other Bitcoiners. I believe Lisa is going to be doing a keynote presentation there. So if you get to meet Lisa in person. So again, bitcoinalaska.org.
I'm really looking forward to that. Thank you for the reminder. I need to book my hotel. I haven't done that yet. I was trying to give my American Express card a break. This travel stuff is like, wow, breathtaking lately, right? Too many places.
There are. There's a ton of conferences out there, a ton of places to go. Wade, if you're available, I know that you have it all up on the website, but for those that aren't going to be able to click on that right now, what hotels do you recommend staying at in Juneau for the conference?
No, don't tell them, Wade. I haven't booked my hotel yet. Don't say that today.
Okay, I'll go ahead and update everybody tomorrow.
No, feel free. Feel free. I'll stay wherever. I mean, nowhere in Juneau is bad.
So, the two places that we're putting everybody at, there's a place that's kind of like a residence inn. Of course, we don't have indoor pools here in Alaska. There's just not a lot of demand for it. Frontier Suites. The other one is, Waterfront on Glacier. They just completely remodeled their hotel. It's beautiful. They took a one person, like a regular standard hotel room, and they put in some, you know, like countertop burners and stoves and washer dryer, and made it so that it's a very well done, beautiful, standard type hotel. And that's located within a mile of where the conference is going to be. Frontier Suites is in the valley area closer to the glacier, and it's about a 12-mile drive-in, but they have a courtesy shuttle to a partner hotel downtown that's right within like 3 blocks of the conference. So they said they'd agreed that they'd run people in if they need to. Of course, you could always rent a car also, which I strongly recommend, being that, you know, there's not a lot of road, but there's, you're going to want to get out and hit some trails. It's just beautiful here. So recommend getting a rental car if you can. But those are the two hotels, Frontier Suites. And now if you book it through Waterfront on Glacier, make sure you use the promo code Bitcoin, and you'll get, I believe it's 10% off. And for Frontier Suites, they blocked off the entire hotel for the conference. So if you just call up and try to make reservations for the 1st through the 7th, they're going to say they're out of rooms. So you have to tell them that you're up here for the Bitcoin conference, and they're giving us are giving you guys a great rate on the hotel rooms for that. So, those are the caveats. Any other questions?
I threw a link up in the nest for Glacier. You had it on your Twitter page. I didn't see one for Frontier. But which hotel is accepting Bitcoin as payment? I believe you mentioned there was one.
Waterfront. And then, of course, not pay until the conference or close to it. I'm not sure exactly what that date is. I'll get with the owner. The owner's actually out of Texas. He's a Bitcoiner in training, so he's going to be accepting Bitcoin for payment before the conference. So you go ahead and make your reservation. You'll probably have to drop down a credit card just to secure it. But then for your final payment, we'll be in Bitcoin, which is good anyway, because Bitcoin's going up in value. You wouldn't want to secure it with your room right now.
Yeah, that's right. And again, everything gets cheaper on that Bitcoin standard. So just put the money away in Bitcoin, and then go ahead and you'll be able to use less when you have to pay for this conference in July. Again, I am so excited for this. I love going to Alaska. I'm down here in Texas, so any chance I get to go up there, I take it. This is going to just be an amazing conference. Again, for those who don't know, we're going to take a private cruise up Tracy Arm Fjord. Go see the glacier, see all the, you know, the whales, the sea lions, the seals, and then also just all the natural wildlife that's out there. So it's going to be an amazing trip. You definitely want to see if you can, swing this and make it a fun family vacation. Not to mention, we're going to have a Bitcoin, float in the parade for 4th of July. So again, support local Bitcoiners.
Also, one more thing, we've secured Paladin Tower Tactics. They're coming up from Texas to do our range day, and they're going to offer some private classes after the conference. So if you wanted to come up here and take firearms training, it's a good time to come up and enjoy our range. There's not a lot of options as far as where to shoot in Juneau because everything's so heavily wooded, but we have a really good firing range, and they're going to be up here doing our range day, and we're going to have information on ticketing for that here coming soon.
Jordan, do you have your hand up, sir?
Yeah, somebody mentioned earlier about like getting out into your local community and meeting up with Bitcoiners. And something that I wanted to add to that is like go meet people that are just have like good principles. Like they basically sound like Bitcoiners, but they may not be turned on to that yet. Because, and what reminded me of that is Peloton Tower Tactics. Scott over there was not a Bitcoiner, but we basically, through some random means, ended up getting him to come help with the range day and setting up a booth in the Citadel in Nashville. And through that experience, we just treated him like, you know, a normal dude. Like, we weren't trying to like sell him on Bitcoin. Bitcoin just naturally sold itself to him because he was surrounded by it and saw how it worked. And so now this guy's a Bitcoiner. Now he's coming up to Alaska for, Bitcoin Alaska. Like, so you don't have to necessarily meet up, with Bitcoiners. In fact, I would say like, go find the people in your community who are just kind of good people already doing the right thing, already have those principles and virtues, and just start working with them. And I think the Bitcoin will come.
Yes, I agree with that. Again, just hang out with like-minded people and then you'll start to find that your values and they'll come to Bitcoin. So you don't necessarily have to find Bitcoiners in your area. Curate them. That's the whole point of this, right? It's the whole point of the Bitcoin Veterans Mission, is to go out there and spread this word and onboard more people. So again, it's going to be tough to onboard Bitcoiners that are already part of our group. So try and find new people. And again, remember, they're not going to remember the message, but they're going to remember the way you deliver it. So always just remain calm and deliver that in a positive manner. So we don't scare them away. But we'll go ahead and start covering some other topics, that kind of happened over the last 24, 48 hours. Yesterday morning, just before noon, there was a Texas state representative, Giovanni, filed for a strategic Bitcoin reserve for the state of Texas. So let's go Texas. They are now the second state in the nation to file for a reserve. Pennsylvania was the first. The bill would require Bitcoin to be held for a minimum of 5 years. And this will be voted on during the 89th Texas legislature, which is scheduled to convene on January 14th. However, even if the bill got voted on day one, which it won't, because there's, I think, about 1,100 bills in front of it, the earliest it could pass is 60 days after it's been voted on and approved. So the earliest that this could happen would be March 14th. Unless the Texas governor declares this bill an emergency and they can go ahead and amend it and implement it instantly. So I think that's some really big news. Again, you're starting to see the states get out. They're actively talking about it. This news was broke on air with Dennis Porter, and he is stating that there's another 3 states that should be announcing a similar bill in the coming weeks. So you're starting to see a lot of traction build with this. And the reason I bring this up is because there is 38 days until Donald Trump takes office. And he is still pushing for somehow adding Bitcoin to the treasury or creating a strategic Bitcoin reserve. And so this is not financial advice, but I am telling everyone that if you ever felt a rush or a need to acquire more Bitcoin, I would work extremely hard over the next 40 days to try and generate additional income to stack a little harder. I have a feeling that once he takes over an office, things are going to start moving at just an alarming rate, and this Bitcoin is going to become extremely scarce. You look what's going on with the ETFs. Like, BlackRock is on a tear. They're purchasing anywhere from 3,000 to 5,000 Bitcoin every single weekday. You have other nation states that have come out. You had Russia. You've had different posturing come out of China. You've had Japan announce something very similar to what Senator Lummis had proposed during Nashville, where they want to look about starting a strategic Bitcoin reserve. And in that proposal, they mention that the United States is starting to do it. So again, there's going to be this overwhelming demand taking place in 40 days. So we can go ahead and discuss it on the panel, but I want to make sure everybody understands, like, if there's a FOMO moment right now, like go ahead and start pushing, because I believe that you're going to see just a parabolic move 60 days out from now. Wade, I see you have your hand up, sir.
Yeah, I just like to spread a rumor that's not true and should be taken as untrue and not shared. Well, maybe share it with your friends so that we can build some traction, so that maybe it'll get some onlookers who will say maybe that's a really good idea. I think Trump.
Wait, Jacob, make sure you cut that preface out of the recording.
Yeah, don't do that, Jacob. I think we should nominate Operation Libertas to replace Jerome Powell. So, just a recommendation.
Get ready for some spicy memes. Maybe I should be the spokesperson or something, or the meme lord.
Jordan.
Oh, we can whip you up some.
I think you can do it, Jordan. Don't sell yourself short. I have faith in you. You can definitely do a better job than Jerome.
I mean, look at who I have. The bar is set pretty low.
Yeah, it's extremely low. So I think any of us can go ahead and fill in those shoes. But I agree. You heard it here first on Bitcoin Veterans. Trump has appointed Operation Libertas, Jordan, to go ahead and be the new Fed chair. So here you go. Spread that rumor. It's true until it's proven otherwise.
I'm going to update my profile right now.
If you do that, it means it's definitely official. So we have confirmation now. We have two sources that have now cited this. So in this digital age we live in, where our attention span is 30 seconds, this is now proven true. So you heard it here first. Dennis Porter's has nothing on us. But let's go back to acquiring Bitcoin. Because again, this is, I really do, I can feel it. I can see it in the headlines. I can see that these miners, you had Riot, oversubscribe on their bonds, that they wanted. They generated an additional, I think, $75 million. So they purchased 5,117 Bitcoin, with a $525 million purchase. So you have the miners who are mining Bitcoin going out and trying to acquire more. Marathon just did a huge $1 billion deal last week. I believe it was Cypher is trying to do something similar in the coming weeks. Again, I'm not trying to put fear into anybody, but I'm just trying to get you to know, like, this may be the last chance you get to acquire Bitcoin, right around 1,000 sats for a dollar. Our buying power for sats might go down quite a bit in the coming weeks. Does anybody have any thoughts or additional comments they wanted to make on that?
I think that there's a risk for all of these folks that don't adopt that they'll become a meme as Bitcoin goes up over time. So I think there'll be this pressure. So Microsoft and Germany already, people are preparing the memes for when Bitcoin goes up. And so if these others don't, it doesn't mean they have to make that choice forever, but that doesn't mean we can't ridicule them along the way.
Definitely have to shame them where shame is, they deserve to be shamed. Again, you don't have to put, I think Microsoft is only trying to look for, I think, 2% or 5%. It was a really low number in the grand scheme of things. They have $88 billion of cash just sitting on their balance sheet. So again, that's peanuts to them, but they still overwhelmingly voted against it. It was 99% of the shareholders said, no, we don't want to do this. So when they realized that MicroStrategy is passing them up as a larger company, they definitely deserve to be shamed. And again, just for a short term, not forever, but just that they understand, like, hey, you guys made a terrible mistake with this. But I would expect in the coming weeks, you're going to see Apple make a statement saying that they're going to have their shareholders decide if they want to add it. And again, it's the risk of not owning any when this thing takes off. And that's where I think we start to see the fireworks in the coming months.
I do find it interesting, though, that our argument is that they should is a hedge. Just because you listen to Michael Saylor and
you don't want to hedge. You want to pick the winner. So I struggle with that. Like, they should have some exposure, but if you know what's right, you should have all exposure. So, yeah, it's kind of like using their argument against them, which is counter our argument.
There, yeah, I think by bringing the votes to shareholders, that in and of itself is the hedge, because they're not really sure and they want to do their due diligence by saying like, hey, we gave you all the option. So when it takes off and it looks like the right move, you can't be mad at us because we gave you the option. And so in a sense, they're hedging their bets of like, we don't really want to do this. We're not sure about it, but we need to at least like throw it out there.
So did BlackRock, they're a shareholder of Microsoft, a pretty significant one, aren't they? Did they have a vote in this? I didn't get to see a list of who the voting parties were or how they voted. I don't know if there is one available.
Yeah, it was, they don't share like the exact breakdown of who voted for what, but it was a very small sum of people voted for it. It was like 0.55%. And one of the reasons I think that is if you look at all the votes for these proposals, I mean, there were a whole docket of them and most of them got voted against. And mainly that's because the board, you know, came out in opposition against all of these things, including the Bitcoin proposal. And so, you know, a lot of people just farm out the leadership and decision making to the board. And so not very surprising to me, I guess, as a casual observer, not a shareholder in Microsoft. But I do think that, you know, now it's on record and they'll have to live with that decision. These big organizations, you know, don't move quickly. So, it's good because it gets into the, you know, into the news, but you know, I think if I'm game theorying it out from a BlackRock perspective, yes, they're a large shareholder. Yes, they're holding on to a lot of Microsoft shares for their clients. A lot of those shares weren't voted. And so if you look at like the abstention column, it was pretty big, pretty sizable from broker held shares. But I think what's interesting is, you know, I think BlackRock wants to not have other Bitcoin proxies out there like Microsoft. So they want to fill their own coffers by selling the ETF. And so to have, you know, this other Bitcoin proxy potentially is not in their best interest, at least in the short term. And so I don't think
it's crazy because they're voting against their self-interest, because the more demand there is for it, the more valuable that their own product will be. And so it's just like, it's not like gold where like if you invested more into like the gold industry, you could actually mine more gold. You're just putting more into it and creating a smaller pie that's left. It's just.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I don't disagree. I think it's just this, it's how the game works. On the other hand though, BlackRock did come out and say, I think it was yesterday, that a 1-2% allocation is appropriate for pretty much everybody. Maybe you're going to cover that, Coleman, but I think that needs to be noted because it's coming on the heels of this vote. And, you know, from the community, the Bitcoin community anyway, you could see where there'd be some scrutinizing of them not pushing the board of Microsoft to, you know, to do this or vote shares in favor of going out and figuring out a Bitcoin treasury strategy. So I think it's interesting, like the timing of their announcement and the report on 1-2% is right for just about everybody. I don't know if anybody has any other thoughts on that.
I think you both kind of said the same thing, that I'm going to agree with, that it wasn't in BlackRock's interest to go ahead and get Microsoft to purchase. Let them go ahead and sit in it for a couple months and watch it go through while BlackRock can still accumulate 3,000 to 5,000 Bitcoin every day. This way they just have such a larger slice of the pie. I forget his name right now, Larry Fink. He he can see out 3 to 6 months. He has a better insight than all of us. He's in the know. He knows what's going on. And again, if you know that there's going to be this huge demand in 3 months, why would you start that early by allowing Microsoft? Because if Microsoft agreed and said, yes, we're going to start investigating it, you automatically, again, it's just a ripple effect through every other corporation. They all are forced to do it because you can't let someone else have a competitive edge. I think the big tell is going to be when Amazon sits down at the end of April, beginning of May, and their shareholders discuss it. I think that's the one where we know the Bitcoin price should be starting to really move at that time. We should have other states acquiring a Bitcoin reserve and possibly other countries. That's where you're going to start seeing like, okay, we can really see the direction that the corporations are going to take during this time. So
I'll push back a little bit, Coleman. I agree with you. I think they're going to have to take a closer look. The vote may be a little bit more sizable to the positive, but I think that, you know, if I'm an investor, and this is what most of the market looks at Bitcoin as, is a speculative investment still. I think for the traditional person who has an allocation to Microsoft or Amazon or any of these big companies like Apple, it kind of starts to make you question if they still believe. If you look at Bitcoin or gold for that matter as an investment, and that's what you think about it, and you don't understand Bitcoin, when you see a big company not investing back into their business by acquiring, you know, someone else or by investing in some of these areas that can improve efficiency or, you know, grow the business, you really start to question like, you know, what are you doing with your capital? Why are you sinking it into this speculative investment? So until people are really understand what it is, I think it's going to be a tough go for these bigger companies to adopt. I think it's strange, but states have a much better and, you know, countries have a much better go of it because you have people proposing bills, you know, to be voted on. And so, I don't know. That's just my opinion. I think the big companies will be slow to move. Doesn't matter what the price does.
I think you're right. But I can't agree with it entirely because I do think the price is going to force people. And I think the people on the, just standing on the edges, looking at what Saylor is doing with MicroStrategy and just watching him jump by leaps and bounds over other corporations, just due to the price and that he holds it, I think it's going to start changing. And I personally believe that you're going to have several countries come out and start acquiring it on their balance sheet. I think that'll happen before Amazon shareholder meeting. I would be very surprised if you didn't by the time this takes place. At the very least, you're going to have states. So I think it.
Yeah. And there's different ways to look at it. I don't disagree with what you said. I think, you know, what Saylor has done is really show for zombie companies that really have no, future. This is the playbook. But for these companies who are like, you know, they're in the top 10 of, you know, all assets. And so everybody's got to hold them and significant portions of them. Yeah, it's hard to see these companies that are thriving and throwing off so much cash and have all this enterprise value and opportunity still for growth, to kind of flip it even with price. I think it's going to be more companies who like just see that they're kind of at a dead end. They operate, but they're not really, you know, they're just there floating around and, there's not much volatility in their stock. It doesn't really get traded. That's more of the way I see it. Although, you know, we might have some surprises. You never know.
Yeah. I think we'll find out, in the coming months as to how this will play out. But Mike, I see you have your hand up. Good morning, sir.
Morning, guys. I just want to let you know, Coleman, I don't know if you could see, but Jordan had his hand up before I did, and I wanted to let him go first. He might have something a little more pertinent to the conversation than what I'm about to add.
I'm sorry, I don't see Jordan's hand up.
Thanks, Mike. That was very gentlemanly of you. which is funny because I was about to say some real like Doom Lord stuff right now. I was, as Bob mentioned, I'm glad he brought up like zombie companies, because as soon as he started talking about that, it made me kind of realize like, okay, that could be what the next like FTX is, right? If we have an economic downturn while all these companies have these big reserves of Bitcoin, because they're zombie companies and it's really, that's the only place they're making their profit, they're going to have to start selling it as they go under. And so I could see it could be a good thing because it could get rid of some zombie companies, but it's also going to put a lot of selling pressure on Bitcoin. And that could be something that if you got enough companies that are invested in this go under, it could really drive the price down. And that is going to make a lot of people think, I think that personally is a good thing because it would wipe out some zombie companies and people aren't doing the right thing, but people are going to kind of pin that on, oh, look, Bitcoin is just acting like everything else. So I don't know, something to kind of be concerned about, but it also could help maybe soften the landing, so to speak.
I do think you're right that that is a concern, but with the new administration coming through and Trump is so obsessed with the stock market, and I think he's starting to become obsessed with the Bitcoin price, I think he would just step in and just try and use every lever he could to make sure that that stock market doesn't falter. So there is a definite potential risk for that, but I think that they would just step in because he is so obsessed with trying to just increase the numbers on Wall Street that he would just plug that. And again, ultimately that would just make the price of Bitcoin go up a lot higher.
Yeah, but I think under a Bitcoin standard, like you can do that, but it doesn't actually solve the problem because then the price of Bitcoin is also going up and it's just the nominal numbers are going up, but these companies are becoming more productive on a Bitcoin standard. And so I don't know, maybe that'll be the race and maybe eventually Bitcoin wins out, whereas that's just dominant thing and printing money has ceased to, they'll just print it themselves out of existence like it always does, I guess. But I don't know, interesting times to be alive.
No, and I agree with you with on that last statement. So thank you, Jordan. Mike, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, the bit I wanted to add to the conversation was the stuff around Microsoft not, or the whole board and the shareholders voting to not put Bitcoin on their balance sheet. If you guys had exposure to the inside baseball of Microsoft's culture, like I have some exposure to it, and I've known this entire time that this question's been out there that Microsoft was never going to have interest in putting Bitcoin on their balance sheet. The culture within Microsoft is patently polar opposite of what Bitcoin culture is. And for those that like didn't know, just as an example of this culture, the Microsoft dropped their DEI standards the day, like, I think it was actually maybe within an hour or two of the first Trump assassination attempt. Like it got buried by the news media, like kind of like monster. So like that, and that kind of got like, I don't think really anybody noticed that, but it's just the kind of like, whether that was strategic or not, Microsoft is still dealing with a major like culture shift within their company. And on top of that, they're also dealing with some interesting kind of like concerns around their chip orders with SMCI, and I can't remember the other one that's over in Taiwan, but they're also being investigated by China around their chip manufacturing. And there's some interesting kind of like rumors or investigative work that's circulating on the internet, especially throughout Twitter, around Microsoft's dealings with OpenAI and the delivery of chips for them as well. So they have like quite a few like risks to their bottom line that I see. And I can understand how if they have all that stuff going on, they're not about to like, if they do, like considering that they do likely view Bitcoin as a speculative risk asset, they're definitely not going to be in a position where they're comfortable doing that right now. And then on top of that, if you consider like what Jordan was talking about, like if the market does roll over and their equity share price does fall, then they're going to be one of the first ones selling Bitcoin, and you don't really want them doing that.
No, you're right. And I didn't think about everything else that's going on with Microsoft in the background. So that's a really good point. We've gone a little bit over the hour, but we're going into Friday, and I want to get completely off topic, but I want to cover this unless anybody up on the stage right now wanted to add any final comments about the zombie companies or large corporations adding Bitcoin to their balance sheet. Okay, so first off, if anybody knows Matthew Pines, please send me a message and tag him on it. I would really like to get him on the show next week, just for everything that's going on. So if you haven't heard, there's been a ton of drones that have been hovering over New Jersey and New York, and nobody can really get the story straight. There's conflicting reports coming from, you know, the Department of Justice and the White House, and there's not really any definitive answers coming from this. I reached out to Randy Kay. He's the one that creates the Daily Intelligent Bulletin that we post on our X handle every weekday. And I asked him on his thoughts on this, and he said he doesn't believe that it is UFOs or anything non-human. He just believes that it is just regular people doing this. So I would like to get anybody's thoughts, what they think is going on, and really why no one has any answers for it. I'll go first. I think that it's another nation. So I would say China, Iran, Russia, and they're just putting these drones over large populated areas just to sow confusion and chaos because nobody knows what's going on. I don't necessarily believe that they're UFOs or they're non-human aircraft, but if I had to guess going by what Randy had said, I would assume that it's just a foreign nation just trying to make everybody confused and distrust the government. But if anybody has any thoughts or comments, I would really like to get your thoughts.
Well, if your last point just to cause confusion and mistrust of the government, well, I feel like they've probably accomplished that with me because while I don't have any evidence to base this off of, and it's pure conjecture, it's just my thinking of the situation, is I think it's more likely that this is some CIA-run operation or something, not even to like collect anything, just to create a distraction while Al-Qaeda forces, terrorist elements take over Syria and they pass a DOD budget. Meanwhile, everyone is just talking about drones over New Jersey. That to me just seems like the more plausible explanation than the U.S. government has no idea and cannot figure out where these things came from. That's the part of the story I just don't believe. Maybe they don't want us to know. Maybe they do know and they don't want us to know for other reasons, but that goes back to mistrust of the government. I don't fucking trust you because you're either doing it yourself or you're lying about knowing who's doing it.
I'll go real quick. Cause I also wanted to hop in, Coleman, I will send the DM to Matt between you two to connect you to try and get him on here. I just can't do it from the mobile right now because Twitter again is all jacked up. And for whatever reason, I can't see like the actual keyboard when I try to send a group message from the mobile app. So I'll do it here in a second. The funny thing is I actually shared this opinion with, Macro Minutes and Cosmonaut, yesterday on their little spaces. I think that what Jordan just said is a high likelihood. I also think that, kind of like tangential, but not like a carbon copy of that idea would be, if any of you guys have played the game Call of Duty Infinite Warfare, it came out quite a while ago. I think I could see there's a possibility of a private military contractor that has significant resources and capability, especially technology. Like if they're tied in with Lockheed Martin Skunk Works, which if you guys have been down the UAP rabbit hole, they've apparently had this technology for a number of decades at this point. I can't remember the name of the CEO at the time. It was Ben something, but he's quoted, saying that they've had the technology to take ET home for the better part of 20 years. So I wouldn't be surprised if there was a private military contractor slash CIA operative or asset that is doing like what Jordan was talking about, of doing like a show of force as far as like their capabilities with, like, as we're charging kind of like headlong into World War III. Like, they're almost, I could see them using it as a kind of like global like brochure. Like, look at our capabilities. Like, the fact that the claim that is circulating in mainstream headlines now that, like, they can't identify the frequency that they're using to communicate with these drones. If you guys, like, we've also kind of done you guys a disservice. We were supposed to have Ashton Forbes on, and then the West North Carolina stuff popped off with Hurricane Helene, and that kind of got put on back burner. So I'll try and reach back out to him and see if he's still willing to come on and talk. Because there's some interesting information that he's put out around the use of plasmids and how they can block frequencies going in and out of a particular area if they're surrounded by this like kind of like plasma profile. So like I could see that being the thing. What I don't think it is I don't think it's aliens. I think this is all human activity. And I could see it as also being a part of Project Bluebeam, which if you guys don't know what that is, I tweeted something out, I think yesterday. I'll put it up in the nest here in a second.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting take, Mike. And I didn't give thought that it was just the United States government doing it just for a complete distraction. I thought it was more outside influence, but that makes a lot of sense. Because again, if it is the United States, doing it, that's probably one of the reasons why we haven't tried to shoot one of them down or intercept them, because then the technology would be known.
Well, and it's perfectly timed, Coleman, with Candace Owens had her live stream the other day talking about the USS Liberty and the false flag operation that they used to try and spark World War III, like, what, 40-ish years ago? And the fact that we have, like, how many different instances does the U.S. military government have of using black flag operations to, or false flag operations to use as justification to go into a new war, a theater of war? Like, like this should not shock anybody.
Yeah, it shouldn't take much to take one down, fly an AWAC over and just nuke the electronics. This isn't brain surgery. If they wanted them down, they could get them down.
Yep.
Yeah, I just want to point out, like, the initial report, like, if you go up the chain, or at least the initial one that I saw was just some, like, frantic congressman talking about how Iran floated a mothership over here and started launching drones from it, which is beyond absurd. Like, the idea that Iran can, you know, take a effectively, like, a small, like, drone carrier and bring it to our coast undetected, and then conduct, you know, then chooses to conduct these like harmless flying over some water drone operations is like a level of absurdity. Like this guy is really just what that is 100% is this guy is trying to get his APAC bonus by starting a war with Iran. That's all that is. You know, like it's the absurdity of it. I can't even like put to words. You know, for all the flaws of our military, like we do have, superior ability to go reach out with our carriers and, you know, bomb places, which brings me to the other point, like the primary testing ground for our military and proving grounds for our military, like Gaza is a slaughter fest concentration camp where they literally test weapons. And then when they go to these conferences to sell them, they say battle tested. And the battle they're talking about is, you know, bombing, you know, like children and stuff in this camp. And you know, we do effectively the same thing. We're just not putting them in camps. We're just bombing them in their homes, their villages. You know, when we have a drone that says bomb, you know, battle tested, you know, they're not necessarily like, they're not battle tested. They just launched a missile at something and hit what it was supposed to hit. You know, so that's our real testing ground. I don't think we're flying a drone over our waters to show that. I think we just, you know, I forget who it was we assassinated, but we used like that the first time we used that like ninja, Hellfire missile, you know, that was in the Middle East somewhere. That's our testing and proving grounds. And that's what we use to sell to, the world. And then there was some other point that I wanted to make. All right. Another thing is like, I think that there are some initial reports that were like legitimate, you know, but then there's also like the mass panic effect. And every time somebody sees a helicopter flying over, they're like, oh, there's a giant drone. So I think that's something that has to be factored into. There probably was like, I don't know, some drones flying around, but it could have been anything from like a hobbyist that just got blown way out of proportion because this dude wanted his APAC check, to, you know, potentially, yeah, maybe there is some like, some agency just doing, I would see it more like it's over like a water source. So like they could be testing out like security drones, like, hey, let's see if we can like monitor activity over this giant water source by using this drone and whatever, doing some sort of survey. Those are all like plausible, reasons that we would have it. And if it is like a security measure, from the U.S. trying to secure our water sources and stuff, that's probably why they would kind of caught off guard and kind of muddled and, fumbling the ball and explaining what it is. Cause they don't really necessarily want to say, you know, we have drones flying over to secure our water sources. They'll just kind of, you know, they'll probably, to your guys' point, they'll punt it over to like, I don't know, maybe UFO, who knows, you know, not us, that's for sure. And then that's just for, you know, like security reasons and stuff, which are, you know, are actually like kind of legitimate. That's my thoughts on it. I don't think that we are, suddenly going to get bombed from an Iranian drone, launched from a mothership. So that's the main point I want to make.
I agree with that. Jordan or Mike?
Yeah. So, something we had talked about in the back chats, was, or I mentioned this book that I just put up in the Nest, Ghost Fleet, and this was published in 2015. It was based on Pentagon War Games, and it describes swarm drone warfare, like swarms of drones being used in warfare. And so this is based on Pentagon War Games, came out almost a decade ago. And if you were to read it now, it would still, if you didn't know about a lot of this drone stuff, it would still seem either futuristic or very much like, yeah, this could happen today. So if the DOD was knew about that and was willing to publish it for the rest of the world to read about back, you know, a decade ago, you've got to think how much further they've come along in both understanding those kind of warfare techniques and tactics, as well as being able to counter them, you know, a decade ago. And just in 2017, we had an array of counter drone technology, because that was one of the primary threats in Syria, was ISIS like flying just over the counter drones over our base. So you've, again, like 2017, that's been a while ago. They've come up with better counter UAV tactics. And so if you want a good understanding, check out that book, but just understand that like we're way beyond whatever they're letting us know they're capable of.
What book was that, by the way? I missed the title.
Ghost Fleet. It's up in the Nest.
Okay, cool. Thanks. And yeah, like, I mean, drones are like I think one of the major threats to our forces overseas. The fact is we still have like an ocean between us and most of our enemies. You know, there could be still like the one-offs that sneak in through the border. That's, you know, pretty porous, but, I don't think they're sneaking in like a Shahad drone or anything like that. You know, it's going to be something recreational that they retrofit.
I find this conversation really interesting. And again, a part of me knows that it's less than like 0.01%, but a part of me wishes it was UFOs. I've always liked UFOs as a child. And so a part of me wants it somehow for it to be true. But at the end of the day, I don't think it is. So no, I really do appreciate everybody's feedback on this. Jordan, do you still have your hand up, or is it just stuck from a previous one?
It must just be stuck up there.
Okay, no worries. But yeah, if we can, again, the reason for Matthew Pines is because he's big into this stuff. And so it would be really interesting to get his take on everything and what he thinks. So it would just be a really interesting show. So if we can make that happen, that would be awesome. So I do appreciate it, Mike, if you can make that.
Typing it up right now, man. It'll send here in a couple minutes.
Perfect. Thank you, sir. But that's it for today. Again, I really do appreciate the conversation, Bob, at the beginning. It was really, really interesting. And then just kind of going into everything else. It does mean a lot to me for everybody in the audience listening, everybody participating, reacting with the emojis, and for everybody who just had us on the background to drown out the voices in your head. It does mean a lot that you're doing this daily, Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. So make sure again you tune in next Monday. We'll be doing this. Not sure if we're going to have a guest or not for Monday's show, but I will post it and keep you updated on the Bitcoin Veterans handle. On Tuesday night, we are going to have Jack Donovan, the author of The Way of Men, joining us on the video podcast at 7 p.m. Eastern. That will be a really good space. If you haven't read his book, suggest go out there on Amazon and order it really quick. It's a good read, but he will be our featured guest, so tune in for that. But that is all I have for y'all. I really appreciate everybody, and let's go out there and remember, it's how we spread the message, not the message that we're delivering, that's going to make an impact. So just have patience, talk to your friends, talk to your families, and let's just go ahead and start taking over our communities with Bitcoin. Have a great weekend, and I'll see you all Monday morning. But don't shitcoin. It's like that dream where you're naked in public, but it's for real.